Welcome to another episode of Skip and Telecast, a podcast about strategy, intelligence, and leadership. I'm Cam Mackey. Environmental, social, and governance, or ESG, is an increasingly important criteria to evaluate companies. A recent study from EY said that 75% of CEOs surveyed are adopting ESG for strategic reasons, primarily competitive advantage, not because of pressure from regulators. To learn more about ESG and its impact on strategy and intelligence, we're excited to talk today with Vanessa Barnett. As Senior Vice President and Global Head of ESG at FactSet, Vanessa is a leading expert on the rapidly evolving space of ESG with a special expertise in ESG data and reporting. Vanessa, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So let's start off with maybe, you know, for those who are uninitiated into the concept of ESG, maybe just give us a primer on what it is, what do we need to know?
Absolutely. So yeah, I think it is a great place to start just to define what we mean by ESG, since, you know, that term is used in a lot of different contexts and means different things to different people. But broadly speaking, when we talk about environmental, social, and governance, we mean looking beyond a company's balance sheet and their financials and really taking a more holistic view of a company's overall health. So from this perspective, it's really not about a company being good at, quote, ESG or not, but it is about a concept that applies to all companies. And I think what's been particularly interesting to me in the past 18 months or so is investors and consumers, I mean, really all of us have felt, you know, on a very personal level, the impact of the pandemic and social justice movements and natural catastrophes. And I mean, my goodness, these devastating tornadoes that we just witnessed. And we've seen those impacts on business as well. And so I really believe that it's now widely accepted that companies do not operate in a vacuum. You know, they're part of our society, and so their health is really tied directly to the health of societies in which they operate. So, you know, now the focus turns to how do we define these ESG metrics themselves? Yeah. And this year especially, we've seen some very significant advancements there. From a corporate perspective, this, you know, is very relevant because you're being asked to disclose metrics in a way that allows people, investors, to, you know, compare apples to apples across companies. And so having a standard definition for things is really important. So we do have the IFRS, which is the International Financial Reporting Standards. They're weighing in with their new Sustainability Standards Board to focus on a very specific reporting framework. And the metrics themselves that are being defined here are breaking down into a few categories. It's one reason why I actually don't really love the term ESG, because it's kind of generic and you don't really know what fits into what, you know, what's social, what's governance. And so SASB, which is, I promise, the last acronym I'll use here, which is another related organization. They define it in a few ways, which I really like. So they generally break it down into these five dimensions. Number one is the environment. That's pretty straightforward. Your greenhouse gas emissions, you know, energy management, things like that. And then you have social capital. So that's more about the societies in which they're operating. So consumer privacy, consumer welfare, product quality, those types of things. And then you have human capital. That's really about the workforce, right? So labor practices, employee health and safety. And then you get more into the governance area of business model and innovation, which is really about things like supply chain management, understanding that full ecosystem of how a company operates, as well as their leadership and governance, which is really around ethics. Mm-hmm. So we know that investors and consumers, they want this full picture that includes all of these different factors or metrics. It is interesting, though, that I think they do have a slightly different take. You know, generally, consumers want to have a better understanding of the impact that a company is having on the environment and on their stakeholders, whether that's, you know, the workforce or communities that they're operating in. And on the other hand, I think investors really want to understand what risks and opportunities, of course, that a company is facing based on all these external factors. So I think, you know, in the end, companies have a lot to consider when they're thinking about ESG factors and sustainability. But I would say one thing is absolutely for sure, that it's just not an option to stay silent. You know, pressure is on all companies, certainly public, but we're seeing the same dynamic happening on the private company front too, that they need to get educated on ESG reporting frameworks and start disclosing, start getting that information out there.
Yeah, no, that was helpful. And I want to pick up on something you said, Vanessa, about in the last 18 months that, you know, some of these, you know, underlying forces have really accelerated around ESG. And I'm thinking back to when, you know, when I first heard, you know, about the concept of ESG a few years ago, it was mostly in the context of, you know, publicly traded companies, you know, investor relations officers, CFOs. And it was, you know, obviously something very important to them, but it was really just a piece of the company. So what's the relevance of ESG and these underlying forces and trends? What's the relevance to strategy, marketing, and especially intelligence professionals?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think all of this matters to strategy and marketing because, you know, in the end, every company needs to ensure that they can operate successfully in a world where things are changing, you know, climate is changing, access to natural resources and consumer and workforce demographics are changing too. And on top of that, you have government regulation. So I'm sure you're aware and everyone of the big UN summit this fall in Glasgow, the COP26, where we're now, what should have been 5 years, but because we had to delay a year, we're 6 years on from the last COP, which people know from the Paris Agreement. Now that's where the Paris Agreement was signed. And almost all major companies did commit to net zero emissions by 2050. So not that companies are not going to have greenhouse gas emissions or emit carbon, but it's more about, you know, offsetting the amount being put out with other techniques to sequester carbon. So, you know, in the shorter term, we have the European Green Deal, which is focused on that net zero emissions agreement, you know, and even here in the US, which is not the most friendly place for government regulation, but the SEC is now putting a real stake in the ground, I think, especially on climate, and making the point that institutional investors must take climate into account with investment decisions, or they're actually not upholding their fiduciary duty. And, you know, to that point, I think one interesting turn of events, especially in this year, is that you're seeing big institutional investors starting to take matters into their own hands now through shareholder activism and proxy voting. I think one of the most interesting stories from this year was this hedge fund called Engine Number One. And they were able to actually replace three directors on the board of Exxon. And this basically came down to Exxon wasn't seen as taking enough action, enough concrete steps to reduce their carbon footprint. Now, of course, Engine Number One wasn't able to do it on their own. So most tellingly, it was really the biggest investors like BlackRock and Vanguard who agreed with them and backed them in the voting against Exxon's leadership to get this done. So in my mind, this is one of the most powerful pieces of evidence that what, you know, maybe once was considered more of a feel-good thing or nice to have is being recognized as having serious financial impact. And I would say the same thing is happening on the consumer side. You know, we're really seeing a huge shift as millennials are gaining more spending power. A recent Ernst & Young survey that I saw quoted found that 84% of their respondents said that sustainability is important when making purchasing decisions.
Wow.
Now, it's a little nuanced because a big chunk of those surveyed also said they worried about higher costs. But I think that, you know, here's where the opportunity is for companies to really have a strategy on sustainability and get that messaging out through marketing.
Yeah. And so that's something I want to maybe go into a little more detail with you with. You know, so you talked about, you know, the governance angle, right, where, you know, whether it's capital markets, activists, investors, but, you know, they're having an impact on companies. And you talked a little bit about how this is driving consumer behavior. And, you know, maybe as consumers, we don't pay quite as much attention to the metrics as we should. We, you know, may vote with gut a little bit more. So, you know, in that, Vanessa, it sounds like there are some strategic opportunities for strategy and marketing, but also some risks in there. So do you have any examples you could share about, you know, how, you know, strategy executives and or marketing executives should think differently about, you know, this world where ESG does matter more to, you know, their potential customers, you know, merger partners, competitors, et cetera?
Right. Yeah, look, it is a fine line because it does come down to, you know, companies need to focus on their profitability, but I think more and more they're able to put more programs and to put more investment into these different areas. And I like to use Lululemon as an example. I think they're really interesting now. They certainly know their demographic, right? Their demographic are generally women, generally people who care more about the environment, and they've really gone all in. I think they're an excellent example of kind of best practices in this area. Because for one, you know, they've been very clear about their reporting and very clear about what their goals are and how sustainability is just part of how they do business. So just to kind of go through a few of the points here, they released their impact agenda. And I just to touch on that for a moment, I think impact is another concept that is becoming more and more interesting, especially in the financial world, of not only, you know, what is a company saying about themselves and kind of point in time what their metrics are, but where are they going and what impact are they looking to have across a number of factors. So I thought it was great that they do call it their impact agenda. They have 12 goals that they've set up across diversity, equity, inclusion, human capital, local community investment, material usage, carbon emissions, and water usage, and the list goes on. But I think for them, you know, again, this is how you kind of weave this into the overall strategy. So they're picking up on the fact that their goal is 75 to 100% of key materials used in their products being used from recycled or sustainable sources, reducing water usage and developing new drying techniques. Kind of a basic one, 100% of electricity used in their operations from renewable sources. Certainly setting their targets of reducing their scope 1 and 2 emissions. All the scope of emissions goes from what a company itself is doing through the whole ecosystem and even what energy it takes to get product into stores, for example. That's all kind of taken into account. And closing gender and overall pay gaps. And so, you know, they're covering the board here, but just this year, I think, again, when you talk about impact and what people are looking for, both from a strategy and marketing perspective, you know, from and looking at it from an investor perspective as well, is what is the company doing, right? So they actually have some very concrete partnerships in place. One in particular is with a company called Mylo to create mycelium-based leather. So basically mushrooms.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Fungi-based.
Wow, wearing mushrooms. That's cool.
Yeah, it's totally cool. So, you know, the nylon market itself is about $22 billion and looking at creating nylon from renewable plant-based materials. And then in addition, you know, they've launched a Center for Social Impact, which is really focusing on well-being and mental health, which goodness knows in this day and age we all need. And then impacting people's bottom lines in terms of expanding employee benefits, raising pay, having employee resource groups, mental health support, et cetera. So, you know, I think they're really putting their money where their mouth is. And I would encourage people to go to the website, look at how they've laid everything out. It's very clear. And I just think it is a great example of best practices. And, you know, Lululemon has been doing very well financially, too. And so I think you can see how that all kind of blends together there.
That's great. And you know, one example that comes to mind is there's this great Swedish industrial bearing company called SKF, which, you know, folks maybe not have heard of them, but, you know, like a pretty big, you know, multi-billion dollar global organization. And I remember hearing a story that they found themselves a few years ago realizing, you know, we're the premium provider in the market. You know, we make the best bearings in their minds that last the longest. And, you know, my goodness, they're expensive. And in order to help convince customers to justify the price premium, which in some cases was three or four times, so what they did is they put some math geniuses to the problem and said, well, great, you know, this bearing is going to last longer. And even though it costs more in the beginning, you're actually going to save money because you won't have to replace it as often. You won't have to pay for downtime and you won't have to pay for like as much lubricant. And all that stuff actually has a pretty big environmental impact when you think about it, not just a cost impact. And so it's one of the examples I love about this, where even though if they did it to justify a premium position with a very, you know, engineering mindset, there were environmental benefits to having something that was just better made and lasted longer. And so they've kind of, you know, used that as part of their ESG proof points.
I think that's such a great example. I love it. And I think it's, yeah, being a bit creative and understanding that, you know, you can actually have competitive advantage when you're leveraging, you know, some of these, you know, just looking at things a little bit differently. So that's great.
So as we think about now, Vanessa, about our audience, so these are competitive and market intelligence folks. And so they, you know, the relevance for ESG for them is to think about how these forces are shifting and shaping consumer demand, you know, potentially impacting their supply chain and, you know, supplier requirements. Even if they're not the ones interacting with investors, you know, certainly looking at how investors are responding to, you know, peer and competitor companies. How should CI professionals start to think about how can I factor ESG into my thinking, into my work?
Yeah, good question. And I think to start with, it really is making sure that you know, who is thinking about sustainability at the company. And hopefully there is somebody, but really getting involved in that, getting to be, you know, on a working group. And I think always kind of helping to shepherd your company into a place where sustainability is seen as being completely baked into the corporate strategy, really thinking about it in every aspect of the company. It won't be successful if it's something that's just done over on the side for reporting purposes. It has to be something that is really kind of felt throughout all aspects of the business. And so I think, you know, to start there is really important and to encourage those conversations. I thought it was interesting to note about ESG ratings too, and, you know, kind of understanding where your company sits when you're looking through the lens of, say, an MSCI rating or an ISS, for example, or, you know, here at FactSet, we have our True Value Labs ratings. You know, each firm takes a slightly different take. And there was a really interesting article just recently coming from Bloomberg talking about MSCI ratings in particular. And I certainly don't want to pick on them by any means. You know, they're a great partner and you know, really important benchmark in the world of ESG. But I don't think that everyone realizes that many of those ratings, especially the ones that are more established, are looking at financial risk to the company. So it's not so much, you know, just because they use the example of McDonald's, just because McDonald's has a fairly high rating, a good rating on the environmental front, doesn't mean that they're not one of the most major greenhouse gas emitters, you know, in the world. Think about all the beef and agriculture. Right. And so I think it's important to really understand the methodologies behind some of these. And, you know, when you're really looking and comparing to other peers in your industry, just having that in the back of your mind that there's, you know, one view, which is how well a company can deal with risks, whether they're regulatory, you know, carbon tax, that type of thing, or, you know, demographic related risks, versus the impact that a company is actually having. And so I think that is the next frontier. But I wouldn't get so caught up, I mean, or don't rest on your laurels, I suppose, if you have a fairly high ESG rating. Know that the perception of ratings is changing a bit. And if you're not really thinking about those impacts and how are you actually reducing your greenhouse gas emissions, for example, I think you'll be caught out.
Excellent. So the your guidance there is to, you know, understand within your company who's working on this. And you mentioned, you know, sustainability. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, some companies will have a, you know, chief sustainability officer. Sometimes it's environmental health and safety. But so working there. And then you mentioned MSCI as a place to find out ratings for competitors. You know, would the sustainability person in your company or maybe investor relations, who's that good person to talk to help understand a little bit of how the ratings might work?
Yeah, for sure. I think it probably could be either in your investor relations team or, again, if you have someone who's running Point, sometimes it's under the legal organization. Okay. But it depends on how your company is starting to report.
Gotcha.
And how they're interacting with these different ratings agencies or various organizations like CDP, which is the Climate Disclosure Project. They're also now part of the IFRS standards. And so, you know, looking at, again, who in your company is helping to run all these metrics, you know, calculating greenhouse gas emissions, that's kind of an art form.
Yeah, it's fantastically tough. Yeah.
It really is. And so I'm sure, you know, with a little bit of digging, you'll find the people who are kind of on the forefront of doing those calculations, working with the different ratings agencies, and they should certainly be able to help you to interpret the results.
That's great. Now, to wrap up here, I would love your thoughts about, you know, where is this going? Like, for example, if your company gets a low ESG rating, is that, you know, what kind of risks does that open up for you? You know, should you know, what do you do if your competitors have a higher ESG rating than you? You know, so where do you see this going? What are some of the implications on Insights professionals?
Yeah, and I think especially understanding that low and high ratings from the more traditional ESG ratings providers do indicate financial risk. So if you do have a lower score, it is something that you need to think about more holistically in your company and the fact that it could impact your bottom line down the road. I would say to start with really focusing on climate. You know, I mean, certainly there's the kind of halo effect of COP26, but I don't think there are very many people out there who don't acknowledge that things are changing, whatever the cause is, but climate is changing and it's having huge impacts across the board, whether you're, you know, in manufacturing or in energy, you know, or even a data company like FactSet. You know, we do have to take into account the full ecosystem, our supply chain, all those things, and what impact we're having and what the risks are of climate change for us. And especially with the SEC really putting emphasis on it, I think we're going to see that as the main thing to really, really focus on, which again is tied very much to the net zero emissions transition. You know, that's a huge thing. every company has to understand that at some point, you know, 2050 seems far away, but many companies are making pledges in the 2030 or even 2025, if they're very sure about it, which seems a little risky.
Seems a little risky, but, yeah.
but you know, companies are making these pledges, and you know, I think that's the topic that we're going to see quite a bit. Yeah. You know, related to that, though, supply chain. I think you know, again, that goes back to the issue of sustainability being woven into every part of the company, and even if you're looking at you know new flooring for your facilities. You know, you should be taking sustainability. What materials are you using? All of that. And there's so many great options out there. The last thing that I would really note is the importance of employee engagement and kind of internal marketing too, right? In this job market, I mean, which is just crazy. you know, it costs a lot to bring in new people, you know, train them, all of that. So retention is a real challenge for many of us. And look, the fact is, people, especially younger people, want to work for companies that they see as being aligned with their values. And so I think that that goes to the overall mission, the how sustainability is being, you know, brought in as part of the overall company strategy and how you're engaging with your employees. So I think there's a lot of kind of internal marketing that needs to happen there too.
I think that I love that because kind of what you've just shared in the last couple of minutes, Vanessa, is just a reminder that, you know, ESG and the forces that are driving it really impact the entire business. I mean, obviously they impact all of society, so I don't want to underscore that, but it's not, you know, this is not something for finance and sustainability to worry about, that, you know, whether you're building your next factory, like you say, and thinking about flooring decisions to thinking about, you know, how can we be an employer of choice, you know, that all these things matter. Obviously, every industry is different, but do you feel that, you know, consumer sentiment in this regard will only kind of continue to be more ESG and socially aware?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I have two Gen Z daughters, and they're even more focused on this than I think the previous generations. You know, people are just seeing this in a very personal way, and it's definitely not going away.
Well, which I mean, it shouldn't go away, right? But I think it's a great reminder, though, too, that is, you know, companies make their, you know, investment decisions, strategic decisions, you know, product development, hiring, all these things, that this has to be a lens that they're prioritizing.
Absolutely.
Vanessa, thank you so much for joining us today. Really enjoyed the conversation and learned a ton.
Oh, thanks so much, Cam. I appreciate you having me.
Interested in continuing the conversation? Skip and Telecon is where leaders come together to learn CI best practices and connect with a trusted community of peers. Hear from great organizations like HubSpot, Prudential, Hershey's, and Abbott Labs, and get Skip certified at one of our highly rated workshops. Visit skip.org to learn more and reserve your seat for IntelliCon today.